Okay, if you turn back to 2 Peter 1, verse 5, we're kicking off a new series. This is the second of the parts of this new series of sermons. 2 Peter 1, verse 5 is what we covered last time. This is the basis for what the next few sermons will be about. In 2 Peter 1, verse 5, what we are given is a formula for bearing fruit. And as we talked about last time, there's one thing that God is looking for from us to be producing and to be doing. It's not just keeping a law for keeping the law's sake, just for ourselves. God is looking, he comes to the bush and the tree, and he's looking for us to bear fruit, he says. He says this in so many different places, that he's looking for us to produce and to bear fruit. And that is, what goes out from you? What kind of things does keeping the law produce in you? Does it produce the things of God as you keep God's law? And he's looking for that fruit to be born. So it's the result. It's what comes out as we keep God's law, as we go through it. And he's looking for us to bear this fruit. And so it's really important for us to take a look at how do we bear fruit. Fortunately, the Bible has for us a very specific formula, which I find interesting. A lot of times, you know, you can identify a problem, but never give a solution. Well, the Bible gives a specific solution here. And it's in 2 Peter 1, verse 5. It says, 2 Peter 1, verse 5, it says, but also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. It says, for if these things are yours and abound, you will neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. And down in verse 10, it says, if you do these things, you will never stumble. Which is very interesting. There's a lot of big promises right there. You will bear fruit. You will be fruitful. You will be bearing fruit. And you won't stumble if you do these things. So the Bible gives us a very specific pattern of how to bear fruit. And so what we're going to do starting in this series, we talked about that last time. So if you didn't have a chance to hear that, I think it's posted online already. You can go back and watch that. But we're going to take each one of these things and to break them apart. The first thing that's in this list that we'll talk about, and we'll bring it all back together at the end, but the first one in this formula is add to your faith virtue. We're going to cover the first one in the list, which is faith today. So if you look at the formula, let's start at the very beginning in faith. I have a question for you. Why does it start with faith? Why does this list start with faith? Why would you put that at the very beginning of all of this? So today, let's just cover three things about faith. I'm not going to cover 10. I'm going to cover three things about faith today. So let's go through and understand, number one, why is this at the basis of this formula? We're going to go through what faith is and a couple other aspects of faith. So if you turn back to Hebrews 11, let's go and find out what faith is. There's a lot of these scriptures we've read before, but let's really understand what it is that faith is. Hebrews 11, verse 1. Hebrews 11, verse 1. So Hebrews 11 would be the faith chapter. It says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. The evidence of things not seen. It's kind of fancy words or a little bit, you know, what does that kind of mean? But if you think about this, what it's saying is that you are seeing the invisible things. And those invisible things are more real than what you do see. It's the evidence of things not seen. It's seeing the unseen. And what does that mean? So faith is seeing the unseen. Unseen what? Unseen, what does that mean? Let's continue on. For by it, the elders obtained a good testimony. And by faith, we understand the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which we see were not made of things which are visible. So the things that you see around you were made out of things that you can't see. And if you think about this definition of faith, it keeps pointing back to being able to see the things that are unseen. There's a lot of things that are not seen. Can you see them as very real in your life? Let's keep going on verse 6. Go down to verse 6. Hebrews 11, 6. It says, without this faith, it's impossible to please him. It doesn't say, hey, it's, you know, God enjoys this, or it's nice to have. He's saying, without this type of faith, it's not possible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. there's some interesting phrases here. So for he who comes to God must believe that he is. If you read commentaries or you just read a cursory glance at those words, people just say, yeah, I just have to believe that God exists. But you know, that phrase means a lot more than that. It means a lot more than just God exists. I believe God exists. It says that he is. He is what? Do you know God is a whole lot of things that are described in the Bible? God is a whole lot of things that are described, but he is a lot of things. He is, we're going to fill in the blanks with a few of those. But when you think about this phrase, when it says he is, it's encompassing of what he is. And we believe all of those aspects of what he is. What are some of those things? You know, faith is a bit misunderstood too. It's seeing the invisible, and it's seeing what he is. It's seeing an unseen God, and it's seeing the unseen realm, and it's seeing the unseen things that God is. Now, faith itself sometimes can feel like an esoteric concept, but it's not. Faith is very simple. Faith is always towards someone. Faith is always towards a person. You don't have faith in, you know, the wall over here. What you have faith in is a person. And it's the same thing with when we read faith in the Bible. Faith is always towards a person. In this case, when we're talking about faith, faith is always towards God and all that he is. You want to think of it that way. So if you read these scriptures in Hebrews, this tells you, you must believe that he, it's talking about a person, is, and that you can see the unseen things. You can see the unseen things. So very important to understand. Three things. The first thing we're going to learn about faith is seeing that the invisible is more real. Or faith is seeing the unseen. Faith is seeing the unseen. Part of this is we don't see God physically, but our faith is always in him as a person, in who he is, that we trust his character. We trust his motives. We trust all he has to do. We trust his authority. There's a lot of things that he is what we have and we put our faith in. So you're always putting your faith in a person, right? Not human beings. You know, it's kind of foolish if you tell somebody to unequivocally put your faith in a human being. They'll say, oh, no, that's kind of naive, right? You know, sometimes I'll let you down. That's the choice you have with God, though, is you unequivocally put your faith in him and all that he is, that you either believe he's all of these things, that we'll talk about a few of them, or not. You put your 100% trust. To a human, that's hard to do. A lot of us humans want to depend on ourselves, and we may have been burnt by relationships, and we don't quite fully trust. But God is asking for us to fully trust, to fully believe all that he is, and that it's true. So what is he? Let's turn back to Daniel 7, verse 9. Daniel 7, verse 9. We won't go through all the things he is, but just to give you an idea, when it says, you know, he is, it means he is a lot of things. He is, number one, here, seated on this throne, Daniel 7, verse 9 through 10. It says, I watched till thrones were put into place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garments was white as snow, and the hair on his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. And thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated and the books were opened. You know, there's a lot of other scriptures. I won't take time to read them. But when it says he is, well, one, he is seated on a throne that looks like this. And there's words in the Bible that explain to us what they look like. I don't know about you, but that would be is one of the most amazing things to see some point in time. You know, one day to see his throne, to see what, you know, he looks like in his glory and to see this fire and the flame. I don't know if you've, you know, seen a lot of, you know, if you watch movies and all the special effects and things, they could recreate some of what this looks like, but I guarantee you it would pale in comparison to actually what it is. Just the tremendous display and the power and all that he is and the, you know, his head was like, the hair on his head's like pure wool. And I mean, if you think about the picture that's painted here, that's when you're praying to God, this is where he sits. That's what kind of throne he sits on. And read other places because it's quite a fascinating story of, you know, how his throne moves, what it looks like, and the cherubim that cover it, and the flames, all the things that are made up of it. It's quite amazing. One day I'd love to see that. Today we have words that tell us what he is sitting on and what he generally looks like. So when it says, you know, must believe that he is what? He is sitting on a throne like this. He is like this. He is an all-powerful being. Right? And so you're thinking about this as you with a relationship with a person, not you with a relationship with an esoteric idea. Therefore, it's important to understand what he is. Let's turn back to Job 1, verse 6. Let's see something else that he is. Job chapter 1, verse 6. We'll just touch on a few points, but you'll get the idea. Job 1, verse 6. This is, now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan also came among them, and the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? And Satan answered, said, well, you know, I'm just kind of roaming around. You know, the way Satan talks, going around on the earth, walking back and forth. And the Lord said to Satan, because he knows, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God, and he shuns evil? And so Satan answered the Lord and says, well, does he do that for nothing, right? Have you not blessed him? You gave him a hedge, his house, and all that he has on every side. You bless his hands that he works and his possessions. You've increased. But God, if you take that stuff away, stretch out your hand, touch all he has, he'll surely curse you to your face. Satan's argument to God is, the only reason that he is obeying you is because you've done all of these things, that you've blessed his hand and you've given him all this wealth. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on the person. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Why did I read this? A couple of things. One, you can see that God directly has his hand in lives, in our lives. Number one, he did all these things to Job. He blessed him. He gave them. He was gracious to Job. When we talk about grace, we need to think about that God gives us things we don't deserve. He gave Job. Job was a righteous man, but nobody earns these things. God gave it to him out of grace and blessed his hand all around. And so Satan's argument is that's the only reason why he's obeying you. God says, well, guess what? It's not. And so we find that God is in our lives directly. He's up there. He's not disconnected from us. He's in our lives. But number two is that Satan can do nothing to us unless God gives the permission for it to happen. You see what happened here. Satan came and he had to present himself before God and kind of, you know, stumble around getting to the point. God got to the point, and he's not allowed to do anything unless he gets permission for it. So when we say God is what here? God is involved in our lives. God is all powerful and authority, and nothing can be done to us unless God gives permission. When we have faith, again, it's in a person, so nothing can be done to you or with you unless God gives permission for it to happen. And we see that in the Bible time and time again. So when we start to think about faith, again, not a feeling you got to make happen, not a thing I got to work up. I have faith in a being, and I believe that that being, he is a lot of things. And one of those things is all-powerful, involved in our lives, and has authority. Nothing can happen unless God permits it to us. So when we start to talk about faith, there's tangible things about faith. Now, let's turn back to Matthew 8, verse 5. This kind of pulls this point together, Matthew 8, verse 5. I've read this one before, but in the context of faith, this is so very important for us to go back to and to read again. Because remember the definition. You see the unseen and believe that he is a lot of things. Matthew 8, verse 5. Matthew 8, verse 5. In fact, let me see. Let's read verse 10 first, because I wanted to read the conclusion first. When Jesus heard it, he marveled, and he said to those who followed, assuredly I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. So the very Christ is proclaiming through something that happened that he has not seen a greater faith than this. So there should be clues in here as to why that is, right? So let's go back and read why that is. So go back up to verse 5, Matthew 8, 5. It says, now when Jesus had entered Capernaum, the centurion came to him, pleading with him, and he said, Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented. Jesus said to him, I will come to your place and heal him, right? I will come heal him. And the centurion answered, and he said, Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak the word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. I say to this one, go, and he goes, and another, come, and he comes. And my servant, do this, and he does it. Now, that example right there, where the man said that to Christ, Christ then answered in verse 10, he said, he marveled and said to those who followed, surely I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. Right? And in verse 13, it says, go your way, and as you believe, so let it be done for you. And his servant was healed that same hour. So we find here that Christ declared this as the greatest faith. Why? Why? The clues are in what he said. So think back about the definition. Seeing the unseen. The unseen what in this case? What is he seeing the unseen of in this example here? The centurion, I mean. What's he seeing that's unseen? He says something about being over and under authority. And you know what he saw? Is he saw who the Christ was and the authority he had. Because he says, look, Lord, I'm not worthy. I know who you are. I know you're a king. I'm not worthy of that. But all you have to do is to say the word and my servant will be healed. And he says, why? He goes, because I am a man also. He says, I also am like you. I'm like you. Under authority. Having soldiers under me. So what does that mean? Under authority. Usually you would think he would say, I'm a man in authority, like, or over, or have authority. But he said it very specifically. He said, I'm a man under authority, because he means that he has someone he reports to, and he has people that are also under him. And therefore, whatever is handed down, he can say, go do this, because he has an authority to carry it out. The very same thing is said, he is saying here about Christ. I know who you are, not worthy for you to come, but I also know what authority you have. I know that you are under authority of the Father. I can see the unseen realm. There's a Father. There's an authority. And all you have to do, if you have the will of God and the permission, is to speak the words and you can make it happen. And Christ said, I have never seen a great faith as this. Why is that? Again, because he could see what God is. God has all authority, even on this earth. He could see who was standing in front of him. He could see he was under that authority. He could see that he had authority under him. You see, the example that he used was that very idea that I just described. There is an authority, and he knows who he is, and he's under it, and he has people under him, and he just has to say the word, and things can be carried out. So Christ marveled that that was such great faith, because he could see the unseen. So when we think about faith, we see, what is he? He is in authority. He has all authority. God our Father. Whatever he says, he can carry out. He has Christ. And Christ, you know, submitted himself to the Father. And here, he was under the Father's authority. He didn't speak by himself. He only spoke what the Father said. But he only had to say the words and it would take place. Can you see that? So when we think about faith, the first point of faith is, you know, it's always towards a person and it's seeing the unseen. So what is he? He is what? He is our Father. He acts out of love. He sits on a throne with his fiery, presence. He only allows things if he gives permission for them to Satan. Satan can't touch us unless he asks permission. And he has authority up, down, left, and right to do whatever he says the words to do. So when we start to break down faith, just remember when we say see the unseen, it's seeing all of this, not just that God exists, but you can see all that God is, sits, his authority, what he says, his words, his motivation, all that he is, you have faith in. It's towards a person, always towards a person, and seeing what you can't see. Does that make sense? I mean, it's that, I won't keep covering more scriptures on that, but the first thing we need to understand about faith is that it's seeing the unseen. And it's all that he is. It's towards a person. And that scripture, if you want to mark it, Matthew 8:5 is one of the clearest examples of somebody seeing the unseen. And Christ declared that you haven't seen greater faith than that. So those are tied together. You can see how the definition matches up with this example and how that kind is carried out. So the first thing we learn about faith is it's seeing the unseen. Right? See the authority he's under. You know, and what that means in our lives is that God has, authority to help you out of a situation, a trial. Trials don't happen unless, you know, God gives permission. God can help with anything. He has the authority to change your situation, and you trust that that's how it is. Maybe he doesn't do it right away. Maybe he takes you on a journey. But you believe all that he is as a person, and that is what you see, the unseen dimensions, his kingdom, his throne, him, his authority, his love, all those things. You're seeing the unseen. All right. Second thing we learn about faith. Faith requires you to follow the pillars of cloud and fire. Faith requires you to follow the pillars of cloud and fire. So turn back to Exodus 13, verse 20. Exodus 13, verse 20. We see an example written down for us today of how God interacted and worked with them. Exodus 13, verse 20, back in ancient Israel. It says, so they took their journey from Succoth and camped at Etham and at the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and by night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. So we see the way that God led them back in those days is that there was always a presence of him in the camp. Like it says, there was during the day, there's this pillar of cloud, and at night, there was a pillar of fire so they could light their way and they could go. And the idea was they could go by day or night. And you know what? May have needed to. I don't know, you know, back in those days, you probably were, you know, you had your tent all set up and you kind of got to a place where you found a really nice spot. Maybe there's a little creek going by and you set up a little chair and you had, you know, you got all of your flock and everything settled. And then all of a sudden, the pillar of fire at night might get up and start going. Guess what you have to do? You have to pack up your stuff, your chair, your nice little spot, and you have to follow that. And it says they could go by day or night. You didn't know when. You don't know exactly when. But that was God leading them. That was God saying when to go. That was God picking up and having them follow him. That's written down for ancient Israel. Do you know, they saw it with their eyes. That's not really faith. Faith is not by sight, right? Faith is not by sight. And you see what happened to ancient Israel. The problem with ancient Israel is that they did not believe. I won't read that, but they didn't believe. They didn't have faith. They didn't believe the promises of who he is. They didn't believe that he had their best interest at heart. So let's keep going down here, chapter 14. We see this, the cloud and the pillar led them somewhere. How did it happen? So they came out of Egypt, they got this, now they're like, okay, well, this should be smooth sailing. Well, it says, now the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel, 14 verse 1 and 2, that they turn and camp before this place and this other place and the sea, opposed to Baal Zephon. You shall camp before it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are bewildered by the land. He's saying, you know, Pharaoh's going to say they're confused. They got stuck. The wilderness has closed them in, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all his army, and the Egyptians may know that I'm the Lord. And they did so. And so when Pharaoh drew near, down in verse 10, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, so they were very afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, because, you know, there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. And you see what happened here. When ancient Israel followed the cloud and the pillar of fire, it led them away, probably at the time they didn't expect, in a way they didn't expect. And it looks like they're cornered. Oh, what? Our God's not that nice. He just cornered our whole assembly. We're going to die. That's how they reacted. When you see the examples of how God and that pillar and the cloud just all of a sudden went up and all of a sudden left and where it took them, it doesn't make sense to a human being, does it? When you read the example, though, do you realize what's going on behind the scenes for that? God plainly declares it so we can read it. He says, you know what? I'm deliberately going to take you this way. And they're actually going to say, wow, they're confused and boxed in. And when we do that, I will take care of them for you. And it will be to my glory that, you know, that people will know that my nation and my hand can save you and triumph over even the toughest, like Pharaoh and the Egyptians. God even says it to them. But when that pillar of fire and the cloud got up and left, they followed it. But then where it went, they didn't like. You and I, when we follow God, there is a cloud, pillar of fire at night, that's not physical that we see, but it's the same thing for us. That in our lives, we're going to have to get up sometimes and go. We might go a direction we didn't think of, or I don't like, or I don't want. And it may look like I'm worse off. It may look like this is harder. It may look like I don't like it. But your reaction to that has everything to do with faith. Their reaction was to be afraid and to criticize God and to say we should have died. Oh, woe is me. When we think about the example that's there for ancient Israel, think about this in your own life. How many times have you had to get up in the middle of the night and go a direction you don't want to go in your life? If you know what I'm saying, metaphorically, how many times have you had to do that? It's the same thing. The pillar of fire got up and went a direction, and there you go. Do you trust that or not? Do you trust that in your life? The direction that you might have to go might not be what you expected. It might be at the wrong time, and it might go a place that doesn't look great to you. But you have to follow the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire in faith. The journey will be one that might not make sense to you. The journey might be difficult, but our reaction has everything to do with faith. Ancient Israel's reaction was not of faith. They were afraid. They were afraid. Now, we read in, I'll just quote this to you. In Hebrews 11:27, it talks about Moses. It says, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who was invisible. Definition of faith reworded. Why did Moses leave? He didn't fear the king and what he saw, but he saw him who was invisible, so he left. Can you leave? God asked you to leave? Could you leave? When I say leave, I don't mean leave the church. I mean, could you leave your house, your home, your surroundings, what's comfortable, something that God may require of you? Could you do that? Turn to Hebrews 11:8. Hebrews 11:8. Hebrews 11:8 says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out. The pillar, a cloud, and fire stood up and asked him to go out from his comfortable house in his comfortable place in his comfortable home. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. I don't know where I'm going. I'm going to follow the cloud and the pillar of fire. And 9, by faith, he dwelt in the land of promises in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city who has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. His builder and maker is God. You can see what Abraham did here. By faith, he stood up and he followed the pillar of cloud and fire out, even though he had no idea where it was going. So you following the pillar of cloud and fire is a part of what we do today. That's a big part of faith. Not like ancient Israel who whined because they got trapped and, oh, we should die. But like Abraham who says, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going to follow you where you require of me. And drop down to verse 24. It's not all for nothing. this type of faith has a reward. It says, by faith Moses, Hebrews 11:24, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasure of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. There is a reward with this. There is a reward of where you're going. And what did it say Abraham looked at as well? He looked at where he was going. A city whose foundations and builder and maker is God. What did he see? He looked for a city whose foundation and builder and maker is God. What is he seeing? The unseen. Right? If your focus is on the unseen, this is what faith is about. All God, who he is, the promises he's done, his authority, the kingdom, the thing that he's making, that he's going to bring back to this earth, you see the unseen. Therefore, you can act in faith. And you can follow that pillar of cloud and fire. And then Hebrews 11:13. Go back at 11:13. It says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but they saw them afar off and were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And if truly they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is a heavenly country. Therefore, God's not ashamed to be called their God, for he's prepared a city for them. That whole scripture, those scriptures right there, talk about seeing what? Again, the unseen. City, place you're going, what God's building, a country. Even though I see what's around me, faith says that I see the unseen. And when that pillar of cloud and fire stands up and says, go, you're okay to go and follow it, even though you don't know where you're going exactly. Right? And you can read this in a lot of different scriptures. I won't keep going through them. Okay, so a couple things about faith so far. Again, you see the unseen, the authority, the throne, the God, all that he's creating and doing for you. You see those things. And you have confidence in the God that what he says about those things and as he's doing are all true. And when that God asks you to get up and go somewhere and do something, or your life goes a different direction, you follow and you trust him. Even though it looks like you just got cornered and you're worse off, you trust him. Like he did with the Red Sea, he opened it up and he brought people through. So, seeing the unseen, seeing that cloud, and you follow that cloud. Third thing to know about faith is, for you and I, there are four enemies of faith that you have to conquer. There's four enemies. I won't turn to all these, but let me just give you the scriptures to jot them down. If you know the four enemies of faith, people know the four enemies of faith. There's four places in the Bible where Christ declared to people, oh, you of small faith, oh, you of little faith. Like, you don't have a lot of faith. And there's four things he said about there. There are four different things he said when he said that phrase. So Christ is telling us, this is called little faith when you act like this. The first one is in Matthew 8:26. Matthew 8:26. This is where they're in a boat and there's a big storm. And guess who's sleeping? Christ. And his disciples were fearful. And so he said in verse 26, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? The first enemy of faith is fear. Fear. This is, when we say enemy of faith, this is a carnal human nature that will pop up when your faith is required, and it'll come out. So ancient Israel was what? When they came up against the Red Sea and they saw the physical army attacking them and they were trapped. What did they become? Fearful. They were afraid. The first enemy of faith that we have to work with, no matter what things look like, is fear. So that's in Matthew 8:26. The second one is in Matthew 14:31. Matthew 14:31. This is where Peter was walking, remember, on the water? And all of a sudden he looked around and what did he see? What did Peter see? The water. Like, I shouldn't actually be doing this, right? I don't say I blame him. That situation, if you're actually walking on water, he turned around and he saw the big waves, right? He saw the physical. And then what he did is he doubted and he sank. And Christ caught him. He says, oh, you little faith, why did you doubt? So the second enemy that we'll run into is going to be doubt. Doubt when you see the physical. Remember this. You have to see the unseen. If you ever have fear and you ever have doubt, what should you look to? The unseen. Who God is, where he sits, his authority he has. Remind yourself of all these things in that being. And if you trust that, you're good. If you trust that and the path it takes you, you're good. So here, doubt. Matthew 14:31. Oh, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? Doubt's an easy one. I don't know. You know, does God really care about me? I don't know if, you know, I've done so many things or I'm all this way or seems like he's kind of not there. You know, there's a whole bunch of doubts that we can have that crop up. The thing you have to do is to battle those things. The way to battle all of these things is to put your view on the unseen things of all he is. Have faith in that. Let those doubts go. These are natural, carnal, human nature tendencies. I'm not saying that, you know, if they crop up, oh, you have no faith. I'm saying when they crop up, you have to battle them. Battle them. Battle them. You know why they come? Because you're looking at the physical. When you look at the unseen, they go away. When you believe the unseen, they go away. Second one, doubts. Third one, Matthew 6 and verse 30. Matthew 6 and verse 30 says, now if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is thrown in the oven, will he not more clothe you? O you of little faith. And then verse 31 says, therefore do not worry. So the third one is anxious care or worry. Oh, I don't know if I'm going to have enough food or I'm going to have enough clothes or I'm going to make it by, or these things are hard today. It can be hard. Or I'm so in debt, or I'm never going to get out of this. Or when you think about that, you know, what are you looking at again? Faith, when you boil it down to seeing the unseen and faith in a being and all he is pretty simple. Put your brain on those things. Put that in your mind. And these things drop off. I didn't say there's, you know, not a concern. And I didn't say you may have to go through a hard time or you might have lost your house. These could be real things. That pillar got up and went somewhere else. And you're following it. You don't like it, but you follow. And you make it and you keep going. And you focus and you see the unseen. That anxious care and that worry, no matter what happens, becomes less. Again, seeing the unseen of God and all he is. So the third one is anxious care or worry. Don't worry. Don't obsess over these things. Don't worry. Oh, you have little faith. The third thing you have to battle is anxious care or worry. The fourth is found in Matthew 16, verse 8. Matthew 16, verse 8. Here's where he was talking to him about the bread, and he said, beware the leaven of the Pharisees, and et cetera, et cetera. And what he said in Matthew 16, verse 8, he said, but Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, O you of little faith, why do you reason amongst yourselves because you've brought no bread? Why do you reason? The fourth one is your own human reasoning, our own human reasoning. We can be smart. God's given us intelligence and other things. But when we rely on our own human reasoning, we are not looking at the unseen. And while it might not make sense to me, I have to believe that more than my own reasoning sometimes, my own head. You have to know you could be completely wrong. God may be taking you down a path that's different. You have no idea. Don't reason it. Don't reason it in the sense of that you second guess and doubt God is what I'm saying. It doesn't say don't go to college. Please go to college. Please learn. Please apply the brain that God has blessed you with to become smarter. That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about you reason around yourself the things of God to where you take yourself out of faith. That's different. Don't have human reasoning. This is hard today because intellectually, if you have faith in God, let me just say this, you can look like a fool. Not about you, but it looks dumb to people who are intellectuals. Does it not? Really, you're going to tithe? You're giving your money away? You know what? That's just organized religion controlling you and them making money. And I'm like, actually, this is between me and my God that he says to do, and I want to. It looks foolish, doesn't it? absolutely, you can look foolish. And so the idea of human reasoning is that people, intellectual, reason around and say all of these things and make you look foolish, and you can't argue them, can you? That's human reasoning. Human reasoning will take you out of having faith. You can't be intellectual because you rely on your own brain, your own reasoning, and be able to see and quantify things exactly. Otherwise, you call it foolish. So having faith in God can look foolish to other people, and they will make you feel dumb. And they will reason around why you shouldn't believe the Bible or what it says, or the Bible contradicts itself, or why did God do this? Or can you have blind faith in God and just completely, whatever, trust Him? Yes, absolutely. If you understand all of the things of the Bible and how God is, you have complete 100% trust in what He is and thinks and does. And you can easily listen to somebody intellectual and they will reason around all those things as bad, or what you're doing is not that smart, or you're just a little sheep. Oh, why don't you use your brain? That's human reasoning. That's the fourth enemy of faith. So Christ says four times, you of little faith, fear, doubt, anxious care, and human reasoning. Those are great four scriptures. Think of those. That's your job. Those are natural things for us as humans to do. And when they come up, see the unseen, read about the unseen, put your mind on the unseen, follow that pillar or cloud of fire where it goes, and battle those things. All of those things focus on the physical. All of faith focuses on the unseen. Can you see the exact opposites are described over and over in the Bible? Fear, if you're fearing, quiet yourself. Read about God. Read about how He saved. Doubt. Don't try to figure it out or where it is. There's a trust. Get rid of all those thoughts of, hey, I'm not good enough. God doesn't like me. And all the, get rid of those things. Those are doubts. Gave a sermon at the feast. You know how many stars there are? It's like 10 million times 10 million. And the number is 10 with 29 zeros. And that's wrong. That's underestimated, right? There's that many stars, and the number is, I can't even pronounce what that kind of a number is. 10 with 29 zeros on after it. That's how many stars there are. How many of you are parents, you know, and you have a few kids? How many of you forget your kids' names? I have four kids. I can't remember four kids' names, right? 10 with 29 zeros are how many stars there are. God has a name for every one of them. Do you think that God doesn't know your name? You don't think God knows your name? He's got 10 with 29 zeros after it, stars each named, and He says not one is missing. Do you think He knows your name? I can't get my own kids' names right, but God can get that many stars' names right. You bet He does. These are the doubts to let go. You may not feel it, so what? Let them go. Focus on the unseen, and all that He is what faith is. You have faith in a being, Him, and all that He is. Anxious care. Don't spend time churning over it. Meditate on the examples in the Bible. See all the different ways God worked things out. Completely creative, completely different, completely like you would never sort out. Have faith in that. I don't know how this is going to go, but it will. Human reasoning, don't take it into your own hands. Don't take yourself out by, you know, intellectually, this doesn't make sense. It doesn't. Sorry, it doesn't. People with faith, it doesn't look or doesn't look like it makes sense, some of the decisions you make. Like I said, just simply tithing. You look like, wow, you must not be that smart with your money. Or you must be controlled by an organization. Or that's human reasoning. If you have faith in your God and He asks you to tithe and you say, this is between me and God, and I do it, and I can see how He responds and blesses me. That's seeing the unseen. Don't let human reasoning knock that out. So, we've gone through very quickly. I'm not going to cover 10 things about faith, but let's just go through three today, which we have. Seeing the unseen. Faith in God and all He is. All He is. And that you have to follow that pillar of cloud and fire as it gets up and it goes a different direction. You follow, like ancient Israel did. Don't know when it happens, don't know why, and don't know where it's going, and it may look like it got worse, but you follow and you trust that He's going to take you on the right path. And then lastly, battle the four enemies when they pop up. See the unseen. Let go of fear. Let go of doubt. Let go of anxious care. And let go of human reasoning. So, why is this faith at the bottom of the stack? We go all the way back to the beginning. Why is this the first thing in the list? Because without a relationship of absolute trust, seeing the unseen, going where the pillars go, and conquering the enemies of faith, you won't get off the ground and bearing fruit at all. You're not going to bear fruit. Without a foundation of a relationship you can trust, you're not going to grow. You ever work for somebody you didn't trust? You ever, you know, things like that? It's very hard. It's very hard when the other person's random, doesn't have your best interests, backstabs you, all these other things. You don't trust it. God, do you trust? That's all he's asking you. Do you trust to see the unseen things more than the seen? And that person and all he is, you have absolute faith in. That's what he's saying. Because at the bottom of it, if you don't have that as a cornerstone of bearing fruit, you're not going anywhere. This is not Tony Robbins techniques. Tony Robbins has some great stuff. I love Tony Robbins. But these aren't Tony Robbins techniques. This is about bearing fruit and at the foundation, a person you can trust to take you through and to bear fruit. What does John 15 verse 5 says? Let's finish with this. John 15 verse 5. This expresses the idea of why it's at the bottom of this list, number one, in a different way. John 15 verse 5 says, I am the vine. You are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. That's why it's at the bottom of the list. That scripture is why it's at the bottom of the list. It's a relationship. We have to live and abide in faith. You will bear much fruit. Otherwise, you're not going to do anything. You're not going to do anything. You're not going to bear fruit. It's at the bottom of the list. We read that all the time, and that's what it means. When you abide in somebody, you see the unseen. You believe in all he is. You follow him the way he goes. You will stay within what he says and do. You will bear much fruit. That's what that means. So at the fundamental core and foundation of us bearing fruit is this relationship that you can trust. That's the start. There's a lot more to this story, which we will pick up the next time we come back.